me is administrations demand accountability from all of us at all times as educators and coaches. And yet they saw fit, the administration, within the Danvers public school system, won't point a finger at any one individual, they decided to sit on this, sweep it under the rug, in an obvious effort to avoid any kind of condemnation or black eye. And whenever you try to do that, eventually it comes back to haunt you, and not only do you get pie in the face, but you don't get one black eye, but you get a pretty good bruising all over your body for having tried to perpetrate this disguise of what had taken place. You know, and it's beyond me why they wouldn't have dealt with it, you know, in a professional fashion, right when word came to them. Was their investigation, is that what led to the coach's, you know, dismissal, suspension, you know, and then, well, we're not going to do anything about it, so we'll bring them back. You don't know, so you end up with more questions swirling around an incident that is disturbing to begin with, but it handled appropriately in a timely fashion, you could have mitigated a lot of the things that are now going to come out, you know, and the questions that are going to be put to a whole lot of people from the superintendent on down.
Yeah, and There's so many layers here, Tim. And you know, we're familiar with a lot of this over the years as educators. You know, we have friends who have been accused, wrongfully. And,
yep.
You know, the name gets out and everybody, is aghast. And then you find out that, in a particular case, in a particular school that won't be named, you know, it was a made up story. But the superintendent at that point had already thrown the teacher under the bus. That's one thing. But on the other hand, Tim, there's too much of this stuff going on. The accusations that were made are too familiar. I played sports. You played sports. I was never, in all the teams I played on at all the different levels, I never once, and I mean this sincerely, experienced any hazing. The older kids wouldn't give us the time of day. But that's, you know, you expect that as a freshman or whatever. But I never experienced any hazing, and the only hazing I ever experienced in my life, I didn't even experience that in basic training, okay, when I was in the service, was when I was a freshman at Lowell Tech. We had to wear those little beanies with the helicopters on them. And when a senior came by, we had to recite E to the X, dy, dx, E to the X, dx, cosine, secant, tangent, sine, 3.141159, because we were engineering students.
So, right.
So we had to, I mean, come on, man. I mean, I could take that. But you take a look at that, and you take a look at the atmosphere in this country right now that just oozes hatred. And you pile that on with what happened at Duxbury High School, with their football team, you know, and using, my God, using Auschwitz as a play signal. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And I just wonder, you know, as a teacher, and I was a coach for a short time. You were a coach for a long time. What is going on, Tim? I mean, where is the civics? Where is the teamwork, the social idea that, you know, we're all Americans, we're all human beings, we're all pulling for the same goal.
Well, I think, along with fraternities, those kind of organizations that have close-knit membership, I think this may have, and I don't have any information relevant to it, but I think this may have been part of the culture for a long time, part of the team accepted, you know, for young players. This obviously, and it takes many different forms, and obviously it's gotten to a very bad place within the Danvers High School hockey program. You know, I remember my freshman year in high school, there was a week of initiation, as they called it. And again, the theme is, you know, what have you, do all these crazy things, push-ups in the middle of the, in the middle of the corridor, or, you know, just tend to do a lot of crazy errands. But after that it was all done. You were considered part of the, you know, part of the student body.
Mm-hmm.
But then never anything that was of sexual nature or abuse that could be even called abuse back then. But yeah, it's taken such a turn for the worst, it seems. You know, hazing and initiation rites, you know, I think that's been, I guess it's been part of everything for a long time, organizations for a long time, but the degree to which the activities now have grown is very, very disturbing.
Yeah, it is. And I think, you know, as a knee-jerk reaction, I feel that social media, whatever social media the kids use now, has exacerbated that. I think that the current political climate that was inherent in the last administration, where you could say anything about anybody and just put them down and insult people, I think that has added fuel to the fire. And it's inherent, I think, of an epic fail of education.
Yeah, I think to be able to step forward and address it in a forthright fashion, and instead of tiptoeing around it, not wanting to upset anybody, you know, we're so afraid of upsetting somebody, you know, and saying what one person or so might consider the wrong thing, so we don't say anything, we sidestep it, we don't deal with it head on, and it comes back to bite us, because we haven't dealt with it effectively. Now, when things go too far, well, you can't rein it back in now.
Yeah, well, I don't know where it's going to go. I just think that, you know, if the Massachusetts district attorney gets involved in it, you know, then we might know more, we might see more, but it,
yeah,
apparently,
you know,
yeah, and apparently the you know, the whistleblower, if I could use that term respectfully, does not want to you know, press criminal charges or name names, because it's a general accusation, and of course it indicts so many different people directly or indirectly. And I think the other offshoot of this, Tim, is that I remember when Al Schwekler was my first principal, he said, you know, you can't blame the whole class for something that one kid does. So deal with that kid, even though he blamed all of us if a teacher made a mistake. But you know what I'm saying? As you know, Endicott College has disallowed Danvers to play there now. You know, that was Danvers high school hockey home rink.
Uh-huh.
And Endicott College has pulled the plug, said, nope, mm-mm, we don't want your kind here, as they said in Star Wars, right, in the cantina. You know, you look at the freshmen and the sophomores and the younger kids, and it's like, they didn't have anything to do with this. You know, I'm willing to bet that there are players on the team, when this incident occurred, allegedly occurred, who were not in favor of it, but were maybe a little afraid to do something about it. I remember as a kid, I was in that situation once. And, you know, I weighed all of 120 pounds on the football team. And, you know, it's just like, man, what are you supposed to do? So it's a shame that the innocent are being convicted along with, or at least are being indicted along with the guilty. And I use those words very loosely, that it's obviously not legally so. It's just disturbing.
Well, you know,
it's very disturbing.
You know, you're part of the team, so, you know, you walk down the street, you know, with, or somewhere in the North Shore, you get a Davis hockey jacket. I'm sure a lot of the kids have put that away in their closet for now till this has some kind of resolution.
Wow.
But you wear that jacket out there and everybody, oh, hey, you know, I mean, think back to 10, 11 years ago when, you know, the pregnancy packet, Gloucester.
I was just going to say, Tim, I was wearing a jacket that says Gloucester High School staff. I was skiing up at North Conway, and people came up to me, hey, listen, you're part of that pregnancy pack at Gloucester High School? I remember that, yep.
I was out of the country, and I had people, you know, you tell people, oh, yeah. Well, you know, I teach in Gloucester. Oh, yeah, the pregnancy thing. It's like, Jesus. And, you know, I remember going over to school after all that had transpired. There was a television crew from Japan out in front of a high school with a camera.
Oh, yeah.
And they were filming it. I'm thinking, oh, my God, halfway around the world. You know, I saw it as a news headline on the BBC website. I'm going, what's the school doing on the BBC? Then I read the article. That's how I saw it.
I got phone calls from the Boston Globe and from the National Enquirer. Oh, and People Magazine. I got phone calls from all three of those. How they got my number, I have no idea. And, of course, I automatically just deferred to the superintendent. I nothing I can say about it. That's another story for another day, but you're right. You get painted with the same brush.
Exactly, you know, and they're going to hear about it. Reading an article today, the faculty is up in arms over this, you know, because they were left out of the dock. And just as, you know, teachers in Gloucester, you know, they're put to the torch as soon as something bad is mentioned that they're wrong, you know, and as we've seen in the not too distant past, and assumed guilty before anything is even done, you know, they're like, you know, this has been on for a year, and you've said nothing, you know? And it's like, how are we supposed to now teach without having the class disrupted by someone wanting to talk about it?
Yeah. Well, I just know that my dealings with Danvers High School over the last 30 or 40 years, the coaches, the teachers, the administrators, top to bottom, has been nothing but respectful and terrific. And for me to believe that this is going on, it hurts. It just really hurts. And you know that, I read one of the things that, well, you know, you can't blame the kids. Oh, yes, you can. You can blame the kids. But the adults are more culpable, of course. And I think that, you know, it's widespread. And I would say this, and I'm putting myself in a precarious position here. But I pretty much, as a coach, knew what was going on with my kids. I pretty much, as a parent, knew what was going on with my kids when they played sports. Now, I didn't know what everything that went on, of course. But if there's a culture like that, that is so... What's the word, Tim? What would you even call it?
I don't know. I don't know. It's,
it just... It defies civility.
It defies reason.
All of that. And if that's going on, which has nothing to do with sports, I would think that, you know, there would be an adult here and there who would know about it. And if there are, and if people condone
it. And talk about, well, you know, were parents aware and yet complicit in not saying anything because they didn't want their child named or...
Sure.
Or suspected.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, this is... It's going to come out of the wash, and there's going to be a lot of people with egg on their faces when all was said and done from the, you know, administrative officials who decided, well, let's not say anything, you know, to, you know, right down athletic director, you have to say, you know, what was he part and parcel to this? I mean, there's just so many open-ended questions that are going to be out there that now are going to be asked. Now that the Globe and the Salem News have broken the story, and we know that the News only broke the story because the Globe broke the story.
And if there's a place like Danvers, which is it's a wonderful community, man, yeah. If this happens in Danvers, it's happening everywhere. I'm sorry, but it is. So how insidious is it? You know, how many communities, how many schools, how many teams are infected by this, and if there is an infection, talk about a pandemic, if there is a pandemic of this kind of culture and behavior, then what do we do about it as a civilized society? What do we do about it for our kids? How do we teach kids, you know, that just ain't right?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have an answer. You know, unfortunately, it's, you know, part and parcel of again a lot of sporting communities and again organizations where they put you through these rituals. But it's when those rituals go too far is when we find out, is when we hear about them.
Well, I have, you know, I have two colleagues I work with, and one used to tell these incredibly, ridiculously awful sexist jokes in public. Not in public, but in the school, you know, in the break room and so on. And he would, there was one time he said to me, well, you don't think that's funny, Rick? And I said, not only do I don't think it's funny, I don't want to hear it anymore. I won't use his name. But I said, no, I'm done with that. And he was shocked. And then I have another friend who made jokes about, I won't even get into it, but it was like, what are you talking about? Because he was talking just to me, and he thought that one-on-one it was okay to say that stuff. And I rejected it. And I don't understand that mindset, Coach. I just don't. I'm sorry. I'm out. Shall we play, shall we get back to sports?
Yeah. You got an interview to play, right?
I do. Let's get right to it. Brian St. Pierre, the St. John's Prep football team is headed toward the semifinals in Division One. Great story, and it's great talking with Coach St. Pierre. So let's play that interview. We'll be right back. Let me take a break, and then we'll do that. And then we'll be back with Gary Larrabee later on. Okay, great to be back now with St. John's Prep football coach Brian St. Pierre. And, Coach, welcome back. I'm glad to have you on this beautiful Monday morning.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for having me on.
Well, listen, Coach, it's been a couple of weeks since we chatted, and I want to go back. The playoffs are headed toward the finals here, and you guys, two wins in a row, and maybe go back 2 weeks ago, Coach, if you would, please. Give me a brief summary on your critique of the game against Shrewsbury.
Workmanlike. I think they did a good job. They came out. They used every second of the play clock on their offensive possession, so they would run it down to 39 seconds of the 40 you have to snap the ball. So they really slowed the game down, kind of played like a four corners back in the non-shot clock days of basketball.
So oh, okay.
That was a very frustrating first half. We were up 14-0. We only had the ball twice, scored
wow.
times, but they controlled the ball for a long time. So obviously hard to win that way, and we pulled away the second half, won 28-0. But it was a methodical game, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I want to get to the most recent game against Wachusett, and I'm reading the article in the Salem News by Gene DiPlacido, and it looks absolutely crazy. Tell me, Coach, a little bit about the first half, which seemed wild, and then we'll get to that second half.
Yeah, I mean, first half, defensively, you see they put 20 on us, and that's obviously not great, but, you know, we had them in third and long at least three or four times, and just blown assignment here, missed tackle there, just kind of let them off the hook. Offensively, we did whatever we wanted the whole game. But defensively, we played better than the score showed. Second half, we shut them out, which is good to see.
And the second half, did you score on every offensive possession?
We might have, yeah. We only punted once in the game, and that was on us. We dropped a sure touchdown pass and had to punt. But other than that, yeah, we kind of do what we wanted.
All right, your QB had a great game again, and again, without James Guy, your running game was pretty solid.
Yeah, I mean, I thought our offensive line played really well, and Carson Brown's, he's had a great year for us. He's kind of emerged since James got hurt about a month ago and hasn't really been back, and Carson has taken that opportunity and really run with it, and he's a strong back. He runs very, very hard, runs behind his pads well, but the offensive line is certainly playing the best they have all year so far.
I got to tell you, Coach, looking at the total yards, 540, according to Gene DiPlacido of offense, it reminds me when I first started broadcasting at WESX, Danvers used to play St. John's Prep, Danvers High School, and there was a kid at quarterback for Danvers named Duke St. Pierre, and between him and St. John's Prep, there was over 1,000 yards of offense in this game. So it just brings me back of the fun of watching offense. I mean, I know it must drive coaches crazy when you see the other team score, but from a fan's perspective, we love watching all that offense.
Yeah, I mean, it depends what end of it you're on as a coach.
Yeah.
I love being on the end we were on the other night, but it's frustrating to see it end up in your end zone sometimes as well. It's a different game now. My quarterback this year has just set the single season record for St. John's with 30 touchdown passes.
Wow.
Season. I threw for 41 in my career.
Oh, okay.
And I started for 4 years.
Yeah, and that was a hell of a lot.
Changed a little.
Yeah, but even that was a lot. My God, that's incredible. Wow. Yeah, you're right. And, we're talking with Mark Betancourt over in Peabody to hear him talk about the passing game. It's like, that's Peabody. Peabody doesn't pass, but, and he said, hey, so you gotta change with the times. So, good for you guys. I want to ask you about now, what's coming up, because, this is the stretch run. And just, you've mentioned each week about, what shall I say? I guess to put it, in proper terms, you can get better. You can play better. And so, you're still striving for that, and it's gonna have to come to that against Central Catholic again?
Oh, we're gonna have to play better. I mean, it's, they're a great team. They're 9-1, whatever they are. We will have to play our best to beat them, and I think the kids are aware of that. We're always just trying to build it for the next week. We're critical with the kids, but it's constructive, and it's, we're going to tell them what they did well, but we're also going to show, where we can improve, because the minute you stop learning, you stop thinking that you get all the answers, I mean, that's when you get dumped on your butt. Well, so we don't want to get dumped on our butt right now. So we're building it. There's stuff we can improve on. I know what the box score looks like, and I know people can think we did this, that, but I look at it, and we shouldn't have punted. We shouldn't have given up 20. We should get off the field on third down. There's plenty.
Right, right.
And the kids know that, but you balance it. They need to know that they did a lot of the things you asked them to do, and they did. So there's a balance there, but we can always get better.
Oh, my goodness. Now, let me ask you finally, I guess, about Central Catholic. I mean, they beat St. John's of Shrewsbury, and so you have film, you know who they are, and you also have last week's game. So maybe you could once again just tell us about their strengths.
Yeah, I mean, it starts at quarterback. He's the best player on the field for them by far. It's not even close. He's probably as good a quarterback. He and the kid from Springfield Central are probably two of the very best quarterbacks in the whole state. So he's a three-year starter, extremely experienced. He can extend plays with his legs. He's a very accomplished passer. He runs their offense really well. So it starts there for us. And then defensively, they run their scheme really well. They're a 3-4. There's not a ton of schools that run a true 3-4. They're one of them, and they do a really good job in it. So they're solid. Special teams, they're really solid. So they're solid in all three facets. But I think when you look at them, it starts with the quarterback.
Okay, and then finally, the game Friday night, 7 p.m. at Cawley Stadium in Lowell. Does that present any challenges going up there to Lowell?
I haven't been to Lowell for 5 years, but I know it's a little bit of a bus ride on
Yep.
95. We'll probably get hit, but we're used to that. We go down to Marshfield, we've been down to Brockton, Bridgewater, Raynham. I mean, so we've done that. Our program's done that for a long time, so our kids are used to that. So the challenge is who we're playing and the magnitude of the game and all that. And our kids get that, but we'll be ready.
I know you will. Coach, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And we'll talk again hopefully next week.
All right. Thanks, Rick.
Thank you, Coach. Take care. Bye-bye. That is St. John's Prep football coach Brian St. Pierre. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore. All right. Talked to Coach St. Pierre early this morning. Great talking with him and St. John's Prep on the way. Big one this week, of course, a rematch with Central Catholic. And that game at a neutral site, I guess it's up in Lowell. And do I have that right? I know I just mentioned that. But, yeah, it's at Lowell, at Cawley Stadium Lowell, Friday night at 7 p.m. Other games, Marblehead will be playing at Shrewsbury versus Westfield Saturday at 3 p.m. North Reading football against Pawtucket Manning Field on Friday at 5 p.m., followed by Swampscott versus Bishop Fenwick. That's D5. That is at 8 o'clock at Manning Field. St. Mary's is playing at Quincy versus Abington on Friday at 7 p.m. And finally, Mashpee. No, that's it. Okay. I don't have the final one on Mashpee over Amesbury, but Amesbury didn't make it. Excuse me. Well, I'm Rick Moore along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Of course, Bill Newell hosting the Salem News Sports Writers podcast tomorrow, and I'm going to talk all about the tournament across the spectrum, including football, of course, and that'll be dropped around 8 a.m. And now we welcome back Gary Larrabee, sports writer, golf writer, sports historian, and Gary, welcome back.
Always great to be with you, Rick.
Great to have you, Gary. Appreciate it. And we are still talking, well, we're talking a lot of sports, of course, but, you know, we bring you in, first of all, to talk golf. And what's going on? What do you want to talk about tonight?
Well, I think we can talk about a lot of familiar faces on the national and international golf scene who made made all the news over the weekend, Rick. First, I'd like to share with Tim the fact Nellie Korda. Yes, one of the Korda sisters, whose father was a very, very successful professional tennis player. She won her fourth LPGA Tournament of the Year yesterday down at Pelican Bay in Florida. And, of course, we think about her a little bit, as well as her sister, Jessica, because Jessica played at Essex County Club back in 2010 when they had the Critters Cup matches there. And they have both blossomed. We didn't know about Nellie at the time. She's a little bit younger, I believe, than Jessica. But Nellie won for the fourth time on the LPGA Tour yesterday. And that's, Tim, after she triple bogeyed the 17th hole to go from one up to two down. And then with one hole to go, she birdied the final hole to get into a playoff, which she won. Which is another beautiful example of why golf is such a crazy game.
Yeah, I was reading that story earlier today, and I'm thinking, wow, the range of emotions that she must have gone through at that particular time. And there was it brought to mind on the PGA website. There's the lead story is, when you get in trouble, go back to your basics. And it's just, you know, step back, relax, think about where you were, what you had done, and then think about what it was that got you to that good place, and play that way. So it becomes more of the mental over the physical when you have that kind of bad fortune happened to you. So obviously, it's something that she must have done in some fashion. Where it said, "Whoa, this wasn't good. What are my better shots? What do I do when I play better?" And she was able to recover from that.
Well, she's been down this road so many times now. This is her eighth win overall in the LPGA Tour, fourth win this year, like I said previously. So I think she must have a very level head on her shoulders. And she had no place shaking off that triple bogey. She makes birdie on the last hole, and she wins the playoff. You know, her sister's won six times. Her sister finished tied for 11th. You know, she's won six times on the tour, and they both won several million dollars each, so they're both doing very well. And, of course, I want to say, guys, and I'm not sure, but there was a tennis tournament yesterday, an international tennis tournament where another quarter won. And it could very well be the brother and a son of Daddy Korda, who was a very successful international tennis. Anyways, that's this million name number one.
I just want to interrupt you with that. She's 23 years old. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, well, she's a great player. And, you know, it's oddly enough that their father was a great tennis player, but the two daughters are now, you know, competing against each other and both winning a lot of money and making big names for themselves in international and, most importantly, LPGA golf. And we all knew about Jessica, and now we know about Nellie just as much as she's surpassing her sister. And we can just keep watching them play and play well. They're both American citizens. I believe they were both born over here, maybe in Connecticut or maybe in Florida. But the quarters are going to be around for a long time, and I'm fascinated to watch them play.
Yeah,
we should also make note. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say the brother, lost in the finals yesterday of a tournament, Sebastian Korda, but he made it very close, and I'm trying to figure out what Wells Masters, I don't know what it was, but he did lose in a professional tennis tournament in the finals yesterday.
There you go. Thanks for correcting me, but he's obviously, I believe he's a brother, and I believe
he's
son, but we'll do some more research on that.
Yeah, cool.
We should also talk about Jason Kokrak, who won the Houston Open after a very rocky weekend. He made four straight birdies for a 5-under par 65, and he wins by two after he played those same holes horrendously on Saturday. But the very next day, he comes back and wins the tournament. He beats Scottie Scheffler and Martin Trainer and for his first third victory in 13 months. Another name to keep an eye out for, Jason Kokrak, K-O-K-R-A-K.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the most popular winner of all over the weekend was Phil Mickelson, who shot a 6-under-65 with birdies on three of the final holes to win the season-ending Charles Schwab Cup Championship at Phoenix Century Club in Arizona. No surprise, Phil's a newcomer out there. He's only 50, but he's really playing with the old-timers, even though he won the PGA Championship earlier this year. He's enjoying, obviously, going back and forth from the old boys to the younger boys. And the other noteworthy aspect of this tournament, Rick and Tim, was the fact that Bernard Langer, at 64 years of age, held on to win his sixth PGA Tour Champion season points title.
Oh, my.
Which is amazing. He won six of these.
Yeah.
And here he is knocking on the magic number of 65, not quite there yet. But he's doing he's accomplishing an awful lot for an old timer, and he's still, and the people I've talked to cover the Champions Tour say he will be winning tournaments till he's 70.
I believe it. There's a picture of him on that tournament that you just mentioned. I just got up here on the internet. And, you know, when we did the Seniors Tour a couple of years ago, God, he looks just as good as he did then, man. He's in shape.
He's always been in shape, always taking fantastic care of himself, a great family man, and, Bernard Langer is still a major force on the Champions Tour. Tim, are you surprised?
No, not at all. You know, we talked about that. We talked about this the last couple of weeks. You know, you look at him, and his body fat probably hasn't changed in 30 or 40 years. He looks exactly as if he's got the same flow of the hair, you know.
Yep.
Him today, and pictures of him back in the 80s when he was tearing up the regular tour, and they go, this guy had a time warp or something, because he still has the same stride, you know, he still has the same fire in his eyes, you know, the Associated Press story on ESPN, they said, you know, he's still winning at an age where most players are playing from the front tees, and he's still fighting out championships.
Indeed, and of course, it's more than the physical elements, but it is a huge part. The physical elements, he is still looking as lean as me as he ever. He looked just as good as he did when he was at Salem back in 2017. And we also should make note, though, that his swing hasn't changed either. I believe he made the cut last year. The last year or 2 years ago at the Masters, guys, and he was the oldest player ever to make the cut.
Wow.
At Augusta National. So this guy keeps making history, and he's very, very religious. He's very, very straight-laced, and he's amazing, and we love to see him play so well all the time at this amazing age of 64.
Have you interviewed him at all, Gary, in the past, one-on-one?
Yes, at Salem back in 17. He wasn't a major factor at Salem that week, but he plays virtually every tournament. He does. He skips very few. He plays them all, and he still has that fantastic swing he had when he won two Masters way, way back. He's just an amazing, amazing physical and mental specimen.
Mm-hmm.
Gary, another name that came up in that article, he was in the running to win that the Tour Championship. Fred Furyk. He's a name that's always on the leaderboard on the seniors.
No surprise, you're right, Tim. No surprise, he's only 52 or 53.
Really?
Yeah. You know, he's only been out there a couple of years, I believe, and he's won several tournaments, and he's a factor virtually every week. No surprise there at all, and he'll be out there competing and contending for a lot of years as well. Always in great shape.
Yep.
A fantastic swing that he's kept the same swing all these years. And he'll be out there fighting with Langer for who knows how many more years.
Well, you know, it's funny. They're the networks are hyping. I guess it's NBC. They're hyping the Winter Olympics in February, and it's going to be in a few weeks. You know, right after Christmas, it'll be hyping the Super Bowl. And of course, when they hype the Super Bowl, they hype the Masters. So the world keeps spinning.
No question. One more golf item to make mention of, guys. I was in contact with Rob Oppenheim, the North Shore Standard Bearer on the PGA Tour, because he failed to retain his card on the PGA Tour during the past season. He played very poorly. We reported last Monday night at the Corn Ferry Qualifying School in Savannah, Georgia. But he told me today that he will be playing this weekend at a unique invitational out of Pebble Beach. There'll be some players there from the LPGA Tour, the PGA Tour, and the PGA Champions Tour, and in his case, from the Corn Ferry Tour. And then he will play the first two tournaments on the Corn Ferry Tour in January, which kicks off in the Bahamas. And he'll hopefully get back to top form. We'll have some great things to talk about, hopefully, from Rob Oppenheim in 2022.
Gary, is there any? Are you still doing your column?
I am not, Tim, but we're getting ready already for 2022, and there'll be a lot to write about in the early going. And right now, though, of course, guys, you guys have maybe already talked about it tonight, but we're still shaking our heads over what happened with the DMSI hockey team. And being a Davis boy, very, very shocking, very, very jolting, and I'm just trying to figure out what's going on with that DMSI hockey program.
Yeah, we were talking about that, Gary, and it seems to be even bigger than that, you know? It's because this whole thing, and ironically enough, the football team had to play at Duxbury on Friday night, of all places. So it's just, a lot of questions to be answered.
Talk about irony in that pairing, huh, my goodness.
Yeah, really. I know.
I'm afraid there'll be a lot more shoes dropping on this story, unfortunately. And I think the town folks are really demanding total transparency, and we'll see what that leads to, and total accountability, and we'll see what that leads to. But breaks my heart being a Damas boy, but gotta get to the bottom of it and let the people Team us know what's going on.
Yeah, well, it breaks my heart, and Tim's too, I'm sure, as educators and as people who care about that stuff. Gary, I'm not sure about next Monday night because we're going to be. I'm just not sure where it's the holiday week, so I'll email you if you're going to be in the hood and we're going to do the show. Will you be on?
I'm always in the hood.
All right, I appreciate it, Gary. Thank you.
Carry on, man. Stay well.
Take care, Gary. All right, that's Gary Larrabee, golf writer, sports historian. This is MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. And please don't forget that we have the North Shore, actually it's the Salem News sports writers tomorrow, with Bill Newell hosting, as the sports writers will be discussing field hockey, volleyball, and soccer before tackling the MIAA football playoffs. All tournaments this week are in the final four phases of the playoffs, and so you will hear from Phil Stacey, the executive sports director of the Salem News. You will hear from Matt Williams, the assistant sports editor. You will also hear from Nick Giannino, sports writer, and Nick Kukru, who is the sports editor of the Gloucester Times. I need to take a break here, and we'll come back, hopefully, with Mike Grenier and talk a little Celtics. This is North Shore Sports Night. We'll be back.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we welcome back Mike Grenier now. Back to MSO. Mike, how are you?
We're doing well. We're doing pretty well. And I know you just got off the phone. I just got off the line with Gary Larrabee. I think he could identify with it. If we're talking about the Boston Celtics. Right now, they're hitting a double bogey every night. Triple bogey.
I'm gonna go to both you guys, Tim and Mike. As I watched with exhilaration when they played Milwaukee, and then I watched they had another good game, and then they had another bad game, and I'm thinking, you know what? This is last year all over again. It's a 500 team.
Yeah, and well, here's the thing. Right now, even as we speak, they're losing to the Cleveland Cavaliers in a back-to-back series they had with them Saturday night. Horrible. I thought it was the worst loss of the season Saturday night, Rick. A 19-point lead in the third quarter. And Cleveland is not a star player on that team. They're a rebuilding team, but they're 9-5 at this point. And I'm sure they'll come back to earth at some point, but they played together. So they overcame a 19-point lead. A deficit, and won the game. And Dennis Schroeder, who was actually the Celtics' best player the last few games, missed a shot that could have sent it overtime.
Right.
The point is, the Celtics should have never blown a 19-point lead, went on the road to a rebuilding team. It kind of underscores a little bit. It's a microcosm. That game was a microcosm of what's been happening all season. And they still haven't gotten their act together. And there's so many things we could talk about here. And, I'm seeing it again tonight, losing to Cleveland. And part of it's been, Jaylen Brown's been out for some key games with the injury. But there's a lot of talk about Jason Tatum, justifiably. He's not living up to his billing, his laurels, his past laurels, and it's a mystery to me because he's a young guy with great talent. And he's just, he's shooting well below his career numbers, both from the field and from the three-point area. So, there's a lot of things going on, and none of them look good at this point.
There was one point. Tim, you with us, Tim? Did I lose you?
No, I'm here.
Okay, good. All right, let me just...
Talk about the Celtics, though. It's like, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, no, the thing is, I know Tim wants to talk about the Patriots, so we can go there in a minute. But there was one stretch, Mike, and I don't remember which game it was, but Jason Tatum was playing a complete basketball game. As soon as he got double teamed, he kicked it out to somebody, he got an assist. When he had a good open shot, he made it. He had some rebounds. He was playing a Larry Bird type game. But then he slips out of it.
Right. I think there was a game there. He shot like 12 for 19. He had 8 or 9 assists. They had a terrific all around game.
Yeah.
But the last couple of games, 8 for 22, 7 for 23, that kind of shooting. Mm-hmm. And obviously, opposing defenses are going to focus on him, right, Rick and Tim, when Jaylen Brown is out. Because obviously, Bill Belichick certainly would exploit the matchups there. If Jaylen Brown's out, then the defenses are going to focus on Jason Tatum. And that's a little bit of the problem. A lot of it also is that Jason Tatum is making really bad decisions in terms of when to shoot, where to shoot. He shoots deep into the 24-second clock when there aren't any options left to pass the ball. He's taking these ridiculous three-pointers that he doesn't have much chance of making. So we have to focus on him because he's their main scorer. But the other guy, Al Horford, who's been pretty good so far, let's face it, he's shooting 23% on three-pointers, Al Horford. And then the young players, Aaron Nesmith, who's getting a little more playing time, is shooting 22% overall, 25% overall. So it's more than just Jason Tatum. They're not getting contributions from a lot of guys in a positive way.
Well, when you go through those stats, Mike, the bells are going off inside my head. It was like, well, they're just not very good players.
Right. Well, I don't know. That's not reflected in their past, though. In other words, like last year, you know, the decent season. A couple of years ago, obviously, they were contending for the Eastern Conference Championship with essentially some of the same players. But everyone's off to a bad start at the same time. And they have a new coach, okay, and the coach has been reluctant to use the bench, extremely reluctant. Enos Kanter has only played in two games. Romeo Langford, who always seems to be hurt, has only played in five or six games. And how about Peyton Pritchard, a kid that we all liked, who can shoot the three. He's a spark plug off the bench. He averaged like 7.5 points last year. He's averaging 0.07. In other words, less than 1 point per game.
Okay.
And that's because he's not getting any playing time. The coach is not trusting him, mm-hmm. along with the other guys on the bench, to contribute. So the heavy minutes are going to the starters. And I think this new coach is trying to make an impression by getting some wins early in the season and building some sort of momentum. But right now, the bottom has fallen out. They can't get traction. And they have just not been consistent. They've been completely erratic.
All right, let's go to the assignment, because you did your homework last week, and we only did half of it. And I know Tim is anxious to get involved here, plus talk a little Pat's talk. So let's take a look at the other conference.
Okay, well, you know, if Tim wants to hear this, I will be in Atlanta Wednesday for the Celtics-Hawks game. But primarily, my wife and I are going to Atlanta to see the Patriots.
Oh, all right.
Now, does that sound good?
Yeah.
The Falcons Thursday night. We will be there in person. I'm sure we will not be the only New England area people, Patriots fans, filling that stadium. But, you know.
I just want to know, are you going to yell 28-3 at some point?
Yeah. You know what? I don't think there's any chance of that this time, Tim, because the Falcons aren't as good, and the Patriots. Wow. I mean, they're playing their best, obviously. Everybody knows they're playing their best football season. But we're excited about going because I think we're going to be with a bunch of Patriots fans all over the building. It's an indoor stadium. It's going to be exciting to be there. They're coming off their best win of the year. Who would have thought 45-7 over the Browns? And they're finding their mojo offensively and defensively. I mean, they're just playing. Sunday's game was just awesome in every respect, right? So it's going to be fun to be there. So if you want any updates, I can give you live updates that night, you know, all that stuff, Rick.
All right. Reporting live from Atlanta. All right. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. But, you know, getting to the Western Conference, you asked about that. Yes, I had done my homework last week. Not much has changed. I'll tell you what, the Phoenix Suns have won 4 or 5 in a row. They're like 9-3. They're playing like a championship caliber team that can get back to a team that can go to the NBA Finals, you know. And really, the biggest change has been the Golden State Warriors. They did not have a good year last year. They're like 11-1 or 11-2. Steph Curry is playing out of his mind. Draymond Green, a veteran, still getting rebounds. They had so many role players. And they're the perfect example, right, Tim, of a team that has role players that are playing roles. They're not trying to be star players. They know that Steph Curry can give them 40 or even 50 on a given night. So if they just play their roles, they have a good chance of winning. And Steve Kerr is a very good coach, so they've really got it going. Right now, you'd have to say that they're poised to make a deep run in the playoffs. But you really like the way they're playing. Utah Jazz will be a factor. They're a very good all-around team. Again, they have a star player in Donovan Mitchell, and then they built around him. Rudy Gobert is a two-way. He's not a great offensive player. In other words, he's not going to go out and take the deep two-pointer or the three-pointer, but inside he's a very good scorer. He's a shot blocker. He's a rim protector, and he gets a lot of rebounds. So they have the right makeup in terms of getting far in the playoffs. So the Celtics could learn from these teams about role-playing, because right now the Celtics are they're just disjointed.
You know, like my brother moved out to Arizona in August, and we were talking yesterday after the Pats game, and he goes, "Hey, I got to tell you, I love Golden State." He says,
"Yeah,
those guys are so freaking good." He said, "Seth Curry's unbelievable."
Oh, yeah,
he sort of discovered Golden State once he moved out there.
Well, and you know, and the thing is, too, Klay Thompson, who would have been the second superstar on that team, I mean, talk about bad luck. He's had back-to-back ACL injuries. Basically, he hasn't played in 2 or 3 years now. So if somehow, and there's no timetable for him coming back, but if they had even a semi-healthy Klay Thompson, they'd even be a bigger threat to win it all. But right now, the Lakers, who everyone, of course, looks at as the team in the Western Conference, they're like the Celtics. They've been really disappointing. LeBron missed the week and a half and all that stuff, but they still have Anthony Davis, and they have Avery Bradley, the ex-Celtic. They have all sorts of talent. Rondo is playing for them. They have a lot of talent, and they're, again, underwhelming so far. So the West Coast version of the Celtics.
Well, right. you know, when you start reading too much of your press clippings,
you
tend to forget that you have to go out there and perform to get those press clippings. You just can't throw the ball out there and expect it all to win.
Well, you're right. I mean, the Lakers were pretty much handed the championship even before the season started because they're made up of big names, okay? I mean, they have Carmelo Anthony, too, who's certainly going to be a Hall of Famer and has played pretty well so far. But they're playing like a 500 ball. And again, they've been extremely disappointing. So, you know, if you're a Lakers fan paying big money for tickets, you're really disappointed in what they've done so far.
Mike, I used to be
a 500 team.
I'm not going to give you an assignment for this week because I'm not sure about next Monday night.
I heard, yes.
Yeah, what I want to do is I want to ask you and Tim, take next few minutes here, to critique the Patriots. I'm going to start with Tim, and then I want your reaction, Mike.
Early in the season, it's me trying to find an identity. Bill trying to find out just what he had in terms of the new personnel that they had acquired. That new personnel was finding their way within Bill's system. Not only the playbook, which is probably the most difficult in the NFL, but also getting used to a new style of coaching, a new demand of coaching, you know. I mean, Bill is an organization unto himself. And over the last few weeks, we've seen a very quick maturing of a disparate group of guys who have said, you know, individually we're good. We should be playing better. And we just got to really begin to buy into what we're being fed here because it's good stuff. We've seen the good stuff that can come out if you drink the soup, you have a bigger piece of pie and believe in it. And God bless him, you know, he nabbed Tom Brady because he saw something in him at 199. And, you know, he said, I'm going to go earlier this time. And he grabs Mac Jones at 15, 16.
15,
and,
yeah. Yeah.
And he's got the next Tom Brady. I mean, this kid is outshining every other rookie quarterback in the league.
By a long shot,
He's not producing gaudy stats and then losing the game. He's managing the game. He's taking what the defense in the game has put out in front of him, and he's executing the offense that Josh has given to him. And he does it better and better every single week. Everybody is playing better and better. The defense, the secondary, what everybody said was going to be the strongest part of the team, is now probably the strongest part of the team. And that allows the front seven to be much more aggressive because you know you've got four guys behind you that are going to be playing lights out and back you up.
Tim, I completely agree with everything you said. And to draw an analogy with the Celtics, and we say they have a superstar here and a superstar there, when you look at the Patriots, and they're 6-4, they could easily be 7. I went to the Dolphins game, the one they lost in the last minute, because they put the ball on the ground. They would have won that game. They could easily be 7-3, perhaps 8-2.
Yep.
6-4. However, can we honestly say, Rick and Tim, that the New England Patriots have a superstar player? No, they're made up of role players. What you were talking about, Tim, I mean, Ramondre Stevenson, who had 100 yards yesterday, he's a rookie. All right, Damian Harris, who was running well until he got hurt, he's a third-year guy, certainly not considered an elite runner, but he was playing great before he got hurt, and he'll be back soon, obviously a concussion. They're wide receivers. Kendrick Bourne, not considered a star player. Jacoby Myers, who scored his first touchdown yesterday. These are role players. I'd say Hunter Henry is probably the guy who has more star power because he was very good with the Chargers, and he's got, what, 7 touchdowns in the last 7 games or something like that. A great tight end. He catches everything that's thrown his way. I mean, he gives you those Gronkowski-type moments. He makes some really tough catches. He gets into the end zone. He bought into the Bill Belichick system. But when you look at their team, do they have a stop, a phenomenally all-pro type player on defense? No, but they have a lot of great role players who not only have bought into Belichick's system, but they're assignment-oriented, right?
I would nominate Matt Judon as a superstar. If he hasn't been, he will be.
But going into the season, do we know that he was going to be a star?
Good point. You know? Well, that's what I'm saying. Yep.
And, you know, you look, they got Trent Brown back yesterday.
Yay.
Yeah, and then, you know, there's a guy who was the year they won the Super Bowl when they beat the Rams. I mean, Trent Brown had as good a year as an offensive lineman as any of those great Patriot teams from the early 2000s. So, what I'm pointing out is that they're filled with role players who know their assignments. They're so well prepared, and that's why they were able to dismantle the Cleveland Browns yesterday. The Patriots were like a 2.5-point favorite. They won by 38. I mean, they are just so well coached, and, you know, they were missing that offensive line cohesion early in the season. However, now they found that. And like Tim said, the secondary is now sort of like the best part of the team. And, you know, you find that even special teams, they're just really good in every aspect of football. And who knows how far they're going to go, but boy, have they made it fun to watch the Patriots again. And we know that they're a legitimate playoff contender. And then after that, you sort of like throw the ball up.
My favorite thing is, Tim, let me ask you about this one. My favorite thing, and it reminds, when we did games, Tim, Gloucester High School back 10 years ago, whatever, when they were destroying people. Yeah. And they'd get a 15-yard penalty. It didn't make any difference. I watch the Patriots get these stupid-ass penalties.
Yeah.
Holding, motion, whatever it might be. And after a big play, right?
Yeah.
You get a big play, and Jones comes back, and he makes up for it on the very next play, and he does it time and time again.
Yeah. He's been great, guys. I mean, like you said, Tim, he's been the best of the rookie quarterbacks by far. And the way he's developing right now, we could throw the word rookie out after a while because he's going to be among the better quarterbacks. His accuracy rate is astounding. The ball that he threw in the middle of the field yesterday to Kendrick Bourne, where Bourne went up and got it between two defenders, that was Brady-esque or Peyton Manning-esque. You know, in other words, he only had a tight window to throw the ball in, and he fit the ball into that tight window. This kid is so impressive. And you know what, Tim and Rick, I don't know if you agree with me. Early in the season, he was, you know, because maybe he's a rookie and he's kind of humble, he wasn't showing a lot of, he was not nearly as fired up as he is now. The more confidence he gets, he becomes a little bit more like Brady, and, you know, extending his arm and, you know, and just like pointing, you know, like to the great plays that happen. He's fired up about playing for the Patriots right now. He knows he's developing into a good quarterback, and he's reaching levels that certainly people didn't believe he could reach as a rookie. And right now, it's just like the sky is blue for this team, you know?
Yeah, the team has to, you know, really be rallying around. I mean, look at this kid. You know, first year out of college, and he is so cool and collected.
Yeah.
You know, he got Cam Newton's ass shipped out of Boston.
Yeah.
Okay? And, you know, well, I'm learning from Cam. What he learned from Cam was, I'm a hell of a lot better than he is. And I got to do is just keep working as hard as I can, like I worked at Alabama.
Yep.
And I'm going to have this job. He knew that. And he just kept his mouth shut, kept his nose to the grindstone, and did what he needed to do.
Yep.
And he did. And every week he goes out there and shows us why Alabama won the national championship with him as quarterback last year.
Right. And I think, too, what we've seen these young receivers that the Patriots have, they love this kid. I mean, they all like to talk about him, whether it's Bourne or Jacoby Myers or any of them. They just love to play with this kid. And he's a likable kid. He's humble. I mean, he speaks the party line in the post game and then during the week. And I'm sure, you know, Belichick loves that. He's just the opposite of Cam Newton, who, by the way, yesterday, you know, he made it score a touchdown. He was 3 for 4 for 8 yards. Okay? 3 for 4 for 8 yards.
Yeah.
Of course, when he scored that touchdown, he yelled to the entire stadium, "I'm back,
mm-hmm.
I'm back," as if he was, I don't know, you know, Harry Potter. I have no idea what he was trying to do by that, by saying he was announcing to the world he was back. He went 3 for 4 for 8 yards. Have a little humility, you know.
Oh, God. Oh, I know, I know.
Well, Cam won yesterday. He, you know, he had 2 touchdowns. I said, yeah, he probably ran for both and didn't throw for anything. So I had no idea how accurate I was going to be in that assessment of his performance.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyway, but, Mac Jones, on a more pleasant topic, I think every Patriots fan and every media person like us, they love the fact that he's a part of this team. And you can see him blossoming in his first. What a great draft pick that was. And Belichick, you know, early in the season, right, how many times did we hear from the national media that Belichick was done, that Brady made him, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Belichick never addresses that type of comment. He just keeps his nose to the grindstone. And now all of a sudden, oh, he's beating teams that he wasn't supposed to beat, and they're in the playoff hunt. And he doesn't look like such a dummy anymore, right, Bill Belichick?
Tom Brady threw 2 picks again
yeah.
in a game, and they lost. What's that, 4 or 5 losses for Tampa Bay already?
No, 3. But they had a bye week, Tim, and they've lost, recently they've lost a couple of games. But, you know, Belichick, I think, you know, people kind of gave up on him a little early in terms of how great a coach he is, even with very few superstar type players.
Have you been down to Atlanta Stadium before, Mike?
No, I've never been to, I've been to Atlanta for many a time, covering the Celtics, various things.
Okay.
I know, let's leave it this way. The what won over my wife was that it's the Dome Stadium. Therefore, we don't have to worry about rain.
Well, hell yeah.
You know, cold weather, and, you know, and all that stuff. But, Tim, that's a great point. If I could find the t-shirt that says 28-3,
well,
right? That would be fun.
I'm going to be at the Wells Fargo.
When I went to Key West, we came back through Charlotte. And I made sure I had my my Belichick T-shirt on.
Yes.
Well, I'm supposed to go to the Bruins at Flyers game at Wells Fargo Center in Philadelphia on Saturday. So I've got a Flyers baseball cap, and I have a Bruins ugly shirt, ugly sweater, Christmas sweater. So I'm going to wear both of them and see if I survive.
Well, you know, a funny story, guys. Rick, if we have it in a minute, after the Red Sox won the World Series, after the Patriots beat the Philadelphia Eagles in that early on in their third
way back.
I remember like that following spring, back in June after the Patriots had won it, the Red Sox had a series in Philadelphia. So we went to Philadelphia, and we knew there'd be a lot of people wearing Red Sox jerseys there. A lot of people from Boston went to that series, but I wore a Ty Law jersey at a Philadelphia Phillies game. And
oh God.
The fans of, and Rick, you know how tough those Phillies
are. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they weren't tangling with Red Sox fans who were wearing Red Sox jerseys. But I got so many dirty looks.
Oh, yeah.
A few unmentionable words by wearing a Ty Law jersey, because they were so mad that the Eagles under Donovan McNabb could not beat the Patriots.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I'm a little nervous, but that complex down there is just fabulous, isn't it?
It is. It's an absolutely great complex.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, listen, so have some fun. You report back on your pro game. I'll report back on mine. And, Tim, where are you going to be this weekend?
I guess I'm going to have to just watch a game on TV.
Okay. All right. Well, I wish you well, Mike. And as I said,
thank you, Rick. And you too. You have a great time down there.
Thank you. I'm not sure about Monday because, like I said, we're traveling. It's Thanksgiving week and so
sure.
on. But I'll email you. We'll check it out.
We'll wait for more from you. And by the way, isn't it great St. John's Prep playing Central Catholic in this?
Again, yep.
Oh, this is a fabulous matchup.
Well, what's great is you got the Prep, and locally for our schools, you've got St. Mary's is still in it, Marblehead is still in it, North Reading is still in it, and Swampscott is still in it, so it's really cool.
It is cool. It's great, especially when you get down there. So few teams left to have so many local teams alive. I mean, that's what makes it so exciting around here.
It's super. All right, Mike, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Always fun.
Take care.
All right, you too, Mike.
Take care. Bye.
All right, we'll see you. That's Mike Grenier, who was our sports writer and a sports historian in his own right. A lot of fun. Still covering stuff. Man, going down to Atlanta. All right, Coach, final word. What do you want to get out of the attic there?
Well, I have to paint the rest of the week. I'll probably be painting next weekend as well. So you enjoy your travels to the city of Brotherly Love?
Thank you. I will, and I will pass along your good wishes to Barry Hanrahan, who is well-known on Cape Ann, the city of Gloucester. He comes from a family of firefighters and a great, great student, assistant general manager of the Philadelphia Flyers, as well as being vice president of the Philadelphia Flyers.
And yes, and give my best to your lovely daughter and her fiance.
Thank you. That's the reason we're going down there. I appreciate that. She's finishing up two more terms at Drexel, and she'll be, I don't know where they're going to be heading out, but we'll have more on that later. But it should be fun. Looking forward to that. And I'm also looking forward to seeing the Patriots. Exciting right now, Tim. It's reminiscent of the year of 2001, isn't it? It really is. Same kind of vibe, same kind of team.
Yeah, you know, because you've got those no-name players all of a sudden gelling as a team, you know, and this is around the time it started to really take hold for that team as well.
Absolutely. All right, Coach, we'll talk to you later on. Thank you. I appreciate it.
No problem, Rick. We'll be in touch.
All right, Tim. Thanks. Take care.
Yep.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Tim Kearns, our MSO super analyst here at MSONewsSports.com. And that is MSONewsSports.com. This has been North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore for Tim and Bill Proposky, our producer and engineer, and also for Bill Newell, who is hosting the Sports Writers Podcast tomorrow at around 8 o'clock here on MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore. Thank you for joining us, and you can always get in contact with us at msonewsports@gmail.com. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Be well. Bye-bye.